Viking Lotossa on nyt 25 miljoonaa euroa. Peliaikaa keskiviikkoon kello 19 asti. Rahapelaamisen ikäraja on 18 vuotta. Apua pelaamisen hallintaan pelaamaltilla.fi. Veikkaus.
Kuuntelet Beatlecastia, puhetta Beatlesista. Äänessä on Mika Lintu. Tällä kertaa tässä ekstrajaksossa mennään hieman ohi aiheesta, mutta ei kuitenkaan. Nimittäin haastattelussa on kaksikko Chris White ja Chris Whitten, jotka ovat molemmat tuttuja Dire Straits-yhtyeestä. Chris Whitein luotsaama Dire Straits Experience saapuu Helsinkiin 17. päivä helmikuuta 2024. Tämän bändin aikaisempi rumpali oli Chris Whitten, joka on mukana tässä keskustelussa. Hän jättäytyi tosin pois yhtyeen riveistä joitakin vuosia sitten. Molemmat herrat ovat mukana Dire Straitsin viimeisillä levytyksillä ja näitä levytyksiä ja keikkoja muistellaan hetken kuluttua herrojen kanssa. Mutta onpa herroilla myöskin Beatles-yhteyksiä. Nimittäin Chris White esiintyi Paul McCartneyn Give My Regards to Broad Street-elokuvan Silly Love Songs-kohtauksessa ja soittaa myös McCartneyn Flowers in the Dirt-levyllä. Chris Whitten puolestaan liittyi Paul McCartneyn kiertuebändiin 1989 ja soittaa niin ikään Flowers in the Dirtin levyllä. Hän on rumpalina, mutta hän oli mukana myös Slova i SSSR sekä Police Live-levyillä. Pääosin siis juttelemme Dire Straitsista, mutta myöskin työskentelystä Paul McCartneyn kanssa. Otteita näistä haastatteluista on kuultu aiemmissa Beatlecastin jaksoissa, mutta tällä kertaa nyt tämä haastattelu on kuultavissa kokonaisuudessaan. Ja tämä haastattelu on englannin kielellä.
Chris White, Dire Straits Experience, explain it to people who don't know about it. What is it about?
Okay. Well, I was the sax player with Dire Straits for a long time, during the 80s and 90s, Brothers in Arms and On Every Street and some albums. And so this, Dire Straits finished as a band in 1993, 4. So this really is about presenting that music and giving people the opportunity to experience what it was like to go to one of those shows. So a key thing of those shows was that they were never exactly the same every night. People would play different things. Mark would play some different stuff. If I was soloing with him, it would go in a different direction each night. So that's something that we try very hard to keep in the show that we present to people. Mm. So it really is about that. And I think that's really, it's grown into quite a big thing this now. And yeah. I think that's one of the reasons that it's grown so much, because it is people playing live and having fun on stage and not just trying to copy what Dire Straits did on a particular night or wear the clothes and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not a sound-alike band. You're more like continuing where the Dire Straits like left.
We just do it the way that it was when I played with Dire Straits and when Chris was in Dire Straits as well. So, you know, some things are the same and other bits change every night. So it means that as musicians, we can add something every night, really. Mm.
Yes. And what are you going to play when you arrive in Tampere?
Lots and lots of stuff. It's the concert's the same as a Dire Straits concert. We're just over 2 hours long. So it will be all the Dire Straits songs, which everybody expects to hear. You know, things like Brothers in Arms, Sultans of Swing and things like that. And a couple of things which maybe they won't. We actually break down it one section into just to a four-piece band, which was the very original Dire Straits band. It was just four-piece. So we do a couple of numbers just in that format from the very early days. So all kinds of stuff, something for everyone.
No, that's good. That's good. So,
something for that. Just from an outside, because I'm an outsider now, but one of the main things about the Dire Straits Experience is they are trying to keep the energy and the rockness of the show with the big PA, the lights, lots of energy, as if they're all 25 years old. you know, a lot of bands, legacy type bands that are going around, kind of go through the motions or do it in a different way, do it in more of a lounge way and talk between songs and things. Whereas what Chris White is doing is it's very much like going to see a Dire Straits show in 1990. It's loud and it's energetic. That's the main thing.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes. Chris White, you joined Dire Straits in the mid 80s. How did you join the band originally?
Yeah, I started working with Mark on some other things. I got home. I was a session player. I was working around London, doing recording sessions. And I got home one day to a message which said, "Can you get to Air Studios on Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock for a session with Mark Knopfler? It's one tune on a film." So I turned up and got there early and met Mark, and we played this one tune. And at the end of that, could you try to play something on the next one as well? So I worked on the next one, and I stayed in that studio for 3 days. I was only supposed to be there an hour. And at the end of that session, that was a film called Comfort and Joy. Mm. At the end of that session, Mark said, "You must come and play with the band." So then that was about 83. It's somewhere in 1984. I got a call to do to go and work with Dire Straits and do the Brothers in Arms. I actually got a call to do the Brothers in Arms album in Montserrat, but I had already committed to an album with somebody else, so I couldn't do it.
Okay,
which is a shame. But
a bit of a shame, yes.
Yeah, that's the way life is. But when they came back from the album, from recording the album, Ed, the manager, Ed Bicknell, called me and said, "Look, can you come and do the tour? We'd really like you to have you on the tour." So that was it. I went and joined the Brothers in Arms tour. And then I've done lots of other work with Mark on other projects he was producing. But that was the start of the Brothers in Arms tour.
Mm. Chris Whitten, you were involved with Dire Straits in the later period. How did you get on board?
Well, I think there was a big charity concert festival at Nebworth for music therapy, and a sort of Dire Straits sort of mutation band played early in the day with Eric Clapton and Steve Perroni and people like that. And then we played with Paul McCartney. We were one of the sort of headline acts on the day. And I think some of the guys in Dire Straits, maybe John Ilsley, the bass player, saw that show and was quite impressed. Then they went on to do the On Every Street album with Jeff Porcaro. And they asked Jeff if he would do the tour. And he said he was too busy doing Toto. And actually, the Dire Straits tour was going to be like nearly a year and a half. So it was a big commitment from anyone. And they contacted, I had a manager at the time. They contacted my manager and said, "Would Chris be interested in doing the Dire Straits tour?" And I was a bit sort of daunted at the prospect of being on the road for a year and a half with a bunch of people I didn't know and stuff. But eventually I went and did a sort of audition at Air Studios, like Chris. They were mixing the album On Every Street, and they got me into Air Studios, and I set up the drums. And I played the songs as if I was playing them from scratch, the way Jeff had played them. And at the end of that, they said, "Oh, we'd really like you to do the tour." So, yeah, I ended up doing the tour. And then actually, the whole thing was postponed for about 6 months because it was like end of 1990, beginning of 91, and the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, that kicked off. And it was just impossible to get on planes and insurance and things like that. So Ed, the Dire Straits manager, said, "We're going to have to postpone the tour for 6 months." So I had a bit of time to do some other things. And then we embarked 91 on this mammoth 1.5 year tour.
Yeah. Chris White, you were on the previous tour. Was there a difference between these huge tours around the world? Because 85, around that year, Brothers in Arms, it was huge. It was absolutely enormous.
It was interesting. The Brothers in Arms tour, when it's So you release an album and nobody knows what it's going to do. Nobody knows if it's going to be big or anything like that. So the tour started in the way of most tours, but very quickly it became obvious. I remember getting on a plane at one point to go somewhere, and instead of sitting in an economy seat, they bought me a business seat. And at that point I thought, well, this must be doing well, this album.
Good indicator.
Yeah, it was a good indicator. And then it was clear. And then it was clear that it went. That album was huge, and the audiences were fantastic everywhere. Just about everywhere in the world that we played was sold out, and it was a very exciting tour. And it was exciting. It was clearly the first time. Look, Dire Straits were a really successful band at that point, but for Mark and John, that kind of success, I think that was the first time they'd had that kind of huge success. Mm. And they enjoyed it. They loved it. It was an exciting tour. It was huge fun. We were all about 30 years old or thereabouts, and it was great. Mm. The Every Street tour, Every Street was a successful album, but not really as successful in globally as Brothers in Arms. So that tour was good. It was, what was it, five years on from the previous tour. So people were 5 years older and it felt different. It was a bigger band as well, actually. There was a percussionist. There were two more people in the band, which changed the dynamic of the thing. The 85 thing felt like a band, like a normal band, but the On Every Street tour felt kind of bigger somehow and was a bit more divided. It was great. I had fun. I had spent a lot of time with Chris Whitten, drank a few glasses of wine together, but yeah, they were slightly different.
So it was enormous in a completely different way. The Brothers in Arms album was obviously absolutely massive with big hit singles on it. And the On Every Street tour was kind of like a victory lap. It was like huge stadiums. We were in Europe, like France and Spain and Italy. We were playing absolutely massive stadiums, sold out. So, but it wasn't on the back of like a massive hit album, I guess.
Yes, because Brothers in Arms, I remember when it came out, it was playing all over the place. It was on MTV, of course, that helped a lot. And also CD was a new thing, and it was one of the first which was released on CD, and that also helped, I think.
Actually, Philips Compact Disc sponsored that tour as well.
Oh, yeah.
So there was that helped too, because there was all that kind of promotion going on.
Yes, indeed. The music of Dire Straits there is something timeless quality to it, because if you think about in the big days in the 80s, actually it was the Dire Straits wasn't really a youth band or a hit band or things like that. It wasn't like I wouldn't say contemporary, but you know, it didn't have that kind of. Why do you think it was so big, these Brothers in Arms? Although it wasn't really out of the place, but almost.
Yeah. I'll answer first.
Yes.
I think you're right. Dire Straits was not a pop band. It was not a kind of mainstream pop band. Kind of came out of the punk thing in the UK, but it wasn't a punk band either.
Yeah,
it was. You know, Mark had all this, all the kind of J.J. Cale history, so that big musical history which punk didn't have. And I think what happened was there a number of things. It was timing. There were all kinds of developments with synthesizers at that period in time, which meant that a band like Dire Straits, any band, if they had people who could work synthesizers successfully, could sound much bigger. You could sound like you had an orchestra with you without having to pay for an orchestra, which was ridiculously expensive. Well, it was expensive. Mm. And I think Mark and Guy and Alan, they embraced that whole new development. So started using those things and introducing new sounds. Peter Gabriel was doing the same thing at the time, really, with you know, tracks like albums like So and that. And I think for me, one of the reasons it kind of almost, and it's one of the things we come across when we play the stuff, that some of them are like classical arrangements. They're like classical compositions. They're very detailed. They're very complicated, and you have to do it right. So for me, I think it's almost like Dire Straits, Peter Gabriel, and a few other bands are like, they're like the new classical music. So in the way that people still listen to Mozart, Beethoven now, I think actually they'll listen to Dire Straits and Peter Gabriel and a few others for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big part of it, that you could present a much bigger picture and a much bigger musical landscape to people. Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah. I could comment on everything. The only thing I can vaguely add to that was that right from the beginning, Sultans of Swing was a massive shock. I mean, I was a young guy at the time, listening to the radio all the time, and it was all punk and new wave and the Police and things like that. And suddenly this sort of almost country, lightweight, finger-picking song and was unbelievably catchy. And it wasn't my cup of tea at the time. And I thought, oh, this is great. This is a really good song. And it really blew a lot of people away. So they were outsiders from the very start. It was very strange how they suddenly came on this. Right in the middle of punk, no one would have dreamt of doing like a sort of country rock track in the middle of punk. It was just not the thing in the UK.
Yeah, and perhaps that's why it is timeless. I mean, I work in the Radio 957 and we constantly play Dire Straits. And it still sounds fresh. It's really incredible.
Yeah, no, I think I can't tell you how many times I've played those songs now, but they still feel fresh every night. There's something about them that works every night. If you engage with it fully and you're in there and in the moment, they're great. And I think the country thing probably helps as well, because Mark's a great storyteller, and I think people really, really respond to songs that have a story. You know, there's lots of commercial pop out there, which is just a kind of a catchy tune with a few lyrics and a pretty face or something. But I think this was something different, really.
Yeah, and also it's interesting to realize that it is a British band.
It is a British band.
Exactly. So I think that was one of the reasons that it became big in United States also.
Yeah. Yes, I think so. I was talking to Jack Sonny the other night, who was the guitar player on the Brothers in Arms tour album, and is American. Mm. And we were talking about Dire Straits. He's still kind of involved in music. And he said it's strange in America, the way Dire Straits is perceived. It was huge, particularly for Brothers in Arms, and then equally big, but different for On Every Street. But actually, those are the two albums, particularly Brothers in Arms and Money for Nothing and Walk of Life, the two tracks. Money for Nothing and Walk of Life are the two tracks. Really, those are the two things they remember. Mm. In Europe and in the UK, people talk about making movies, all the early albums, with the same passion as those two big albums. But in America, it was those two which really defined it.
Yeah, exactly. So you actually met during the tour, on the last tour, so you didn't meet before each other.
We did. Okay. We did meet before. I don't know if Chris remembers. I met Chris. I am one of the sax players in a big section on Flowers in the Dirt, which is Paul McCartney's album. And I remember Chris.
Oh, yeah.
We were there recording brass, and Chris was in the control room with Paul and
Hamish.
And Hamish, yeah. And at the end of the session, we're standing around and I said, hi. Somebody said, this is Chris Whitten, he's the drummer. I said, hi Chris, how are you?
Normaalista löytyy lähes kaikkea ja kaikki myydään pois. Siksi saat nyt Pepsodent hammastahnan vain hintaan 2,50. Normaalisti 2,50. Eikä siinä vielä kaikki. Voit myös ostaa 5 omapakkausta ja viedä kotiin 5. Tai osta V7 puuteri hintaan 4,70. Säästä jopa 0 euroa. Voimassa niin kauan kuin varastoa riittää. Ja sen jälkeen tilaamme lisää. Normal. Pysyvästi edulliset hinnat.
Well, that was actually where we first met, was Paul McCartney's Flowers in the Dirt session.
Oh, yeah, okay. So,
kind of affinity with the brass section, because when I was at college, I did some shows with the National Youth Jazz Orchestra. And a lot of those people went on to become top session players in London. So I knew quite a few of the brass section anyway, like the trombone and trumpet and people like that. And I didn't really know Chris, but they sounded great. So I just went in the room and said hello to everyone because they sounded so good. But I might have even met Chris before then, because I remember in about 1983 or 4 or something, for some reason I was in Air Studios and somebody said, oh, Jeff Emmerich's in Studio One, why don't you pop your head in the door? Which, crazy, really. I had no place doing that. I popped my head in the door and Jeff Emmerich was producing Nick Hayward. And yeah. I think Chris had played some sax on that. He may have been on that session, but
I did weeks in there with Jeff.
Well, I might have seen you then.
Well. Okay. So, Chris White, you had encounters with Paul McCartney before and a film called Give My Regards to Broad Street. Tell us about that.
I did. Well, actually, that's great you've just led into that, Chris, because that came about, I was working with Nick Hayward and Jeff Emmerich. Jeff had engineered most of the, probably all of the Beatles stuff, and was working at that time with Paul on this movie, Give My Regards to Broad Street. So we were doing 1 week in the studio with Nick, and then Jeff would go away for a week and do a week on the movie with Paul. Then we'd come back to the studio for a week with, and I think they were looking for brass for a track called Silly Love Songs, which was in the movie, and they hadn't got the people they wanted, or something wasn't right, and somebody suggested, I think probably it was Jeff, had probably said one day, well, there's this guy Chris White who's working on Nick's album or something, and I got a call saying, could you come to the studio, and we'd like to talk about this film we're doing with Paul McCartney. That was to be on a Monday, and I got the call on the Friday. So I kind of said, yeah, great. And I spent the whole weekend practicing like mad and just playing and playing and playing. And I turned up at the film set on the Monday with my saxophone, and I walked into they sent me to the producer's office. I've forgotten his name. Anyway, so I walked into the office and he looked at me and went, oh, you got your horn. Are you working later? And I said, no, I thought I'd have to, I thought I'd have to play. He went, oh, no, we just wanted to see what you look like. No, you're fine. Okay, can you start?
Okay, what a disappointment.
Yeah. Spent the whole weekend fretting. So then I worked with Paul on that track, which was Jeff Porcaro, Linda, Lewis Johnson, and Steve Lukather, and a brass. And it was, and we spent most, if you know about filming, it's kind of 2 minutes of action and 2 hours of nothing. So I'd spent a week jamming with Jeff Porcaro and Steve Lukather and Lewis Johnson. Fantastic. It was brilliant.
So jealous of that.
It was great. I loved working with Jeff, Chris. I loved working with Jeff. I like working with you too.
I thought I had the ultimate McCartney experience. And then when Chris told me about that, oh, damn. Paul McCartney wasn't on my radar, and I was doing this alternative rock band, Julian Cope, and playing these sort of sweaty clubs. And I got home from doing a rehearsal or something on a Friday evening, and we're back in the day, we didn't have cell phones or anything, we had answering machines, and there was a couple of messages on my answering machine, so I clicked play. And there was this message, oh, this is Alan from Paul McCartney's office. Can you give us a call back? And I thought, oh, no, it's Friday, 9 o'clock. I can't call them till Monday. So I didn't spend a whole weekend practicing. I just spent a whole weekend of not sleeping, wondering what this phone call was about. Anyway, on the Monday, I called. I tried to be cool. I thought, what time are they going to open? Maybe 9, 10 o'clock. So I thought, I'll wait until 11 and then I'll call them back. I don't want to look too desperate. So I called them back, and all it was Paul was looking for some new musicians, and he was trying to do some sort of just informal jam sessions around London. They were inviting me to one of these jam sessions, but that was a hell of a weekend waiting to find out what that was going to be about.
Yeah. And the rest is history. So you joined the band, and I understand that you started making an album without knowing it. Russian album.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that was part of the audition process, really. When we were doing these jam sessions, Paul just wanted to play 50s rock and roll. That's kind of his favorite music. That's what the Beatles, like John Lennon, did a whole album of called Rock and Roll. And Paul loves the same sort of songs. So when we were doing these jam sessions, it was just 50s rock and roll. And there was no rehearsal or anything. It was just like, well, okay, Lucille. And you just had to know it, kind of thing, which luckily I did know that stuff. And I always say to young musicians now, you talk to a lot of young musicians and they only know the music that they like. Like if they like Dire Straits, they only know Dire Straits and nothing else. And I say, well, if you ever wanted to play in a band like Dire Straits, you have to know a lot of other stuff. You have to understand a lot of other music, whether it's funk, jazz or rock and roll. So I have to know all this old 50s rock and roll. And I was the only person who got through that audition process in the end. But one of the parts of the audition was, can you go to Paul's studio and we're going to record? Paul really likes the jams. Can we go and record them? So it was all one take and no rehearsal. And it was just a bit of fun. And at the end of it, Paul was really happy with the end result and said, let's put it out as an album.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when the album came, I actually have a copy original from the 80s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From Soviet Union.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And there are actually thousands of these records still here in Finland because these tourists came from Soviet Union and they were selling it in the street to finance their trips, which was funny. Yeah, that was funny. But you ended up doing also Flowers in the Dirt. What kind of process was that for you?
Yeah, well, we did that Russian rock album, and then Paul brought out a best of all the best, I think it was called. And I was never asked to be in the band. It was just like a phone call every few weeks. Can you do this with Paul? Can you do that with Paul? And they said, we're doing this best of album and a Christmas single. Can we do a video? And then we're going to do some TV. So I did that whole thing of TV and video and stuff up to the end of 1987. And then the manager, right at the end of the year, the manager called me and said, Paul's going to start a new album in January. We'd love you to be the drummer. And so I got hired for that. And he'd been writing these songs with Elvis Costello. So the beginning of the album was actually recording some of the songs that he'd written with Elvis Costello. And again, we had Jeff Emmerich in the control room, and Elvis Costello was there, and Hamish, we'd got Hamish on board by then. So it was a very small group of people. And we did about a month of recording with Elvis Costello, and it just went on and on for like a year and a half. Just Paul kept bringing in new songs, and we had about 35 songs halfway through the album. And then just in the summer holidays, he gave everyone a cassette of all the songs and said, come back and tell me what your favorite 12 songs are, kind of thing. Everybody, including his children, they all had a say on what their favorite songs were. And then we more concentrated on those songs for the rest of the period.
Mm. And you also got tour with Paul McCartney. It seems that in the 80s, many these rock stars who were big in the 60s and 70s, these pushing 50s, seem to be a little bit lost. I mean, Bob Dylan and Rolling Stones, etc., and also Paul. And they were not having a good time in the 80s. Am I right?
Possibly. I wasn't around them until the end, so I don't really know. But I know that the whole thing, the last couple of albums that he did before I joined him were not very commercially successful, and the critics sort of slammed them. And he'd been working with a lot of American musicians and flying people in for a couple of days and then flying them back and everything. And so he got himself a manager, a guy called Richard Ogden. And Richard said, you know, Paul, you've got an incredible legacy. You should be out there exploiting it. You know, rediscover some of your old songs, and you need a band, and you need some younger musicians. You don't want to be with all these studio players all the time. Let's find a band. So that was how I ended up getting involved. And so we were a band from the start. And even, you know, I just did some drums at the beginning of the album, but Paul wanted me there every day commenting on guitar overdubs and can you do some background vocals and things like that. And so right from the start, this manager guy had this plan. We're going to get you a younger band and we're going to do this album. It's going to be the best album you've done for a long time. And we're going to get you working with people like Elvis Costello, who've got a bit more edge to them. And then I want you to do like a proper world tour and actually play some of the Wings material, a lot of Beatles material, and not be apologizing for it and not be just playing your new songs. Mm. And so that was the whole plan. And actually it was all on a knife edge at every stage. You know, are we going to do the new album? Is he actually going to tour? He was very hesitant to do the tour to begin with. He didn't want to be slammed by the critics and playing in front of 20 people kind of thing. So people had to sort of persuade him that it was the right thing to do. And when we started the tour, it was just phenomenal because people were just blown away by it. And the funny thing is that model, he's kept that model ever since. He goes out every year, apart from during the pandemic, but every year since then he's gone out and he's played like half new material, half Beatles material. And so that was the first tour that set that model that he's been using ever since, really. And he's got a young band again now. Well, they relatively young. They were young when they started out. Now they're middle age. Yeah, they're rockers, you know, and they play in a rock style. A bit like the Dire Straits experience.
Yeah, exactly. And Chris Whitten, what happens in your life at the moment?
Well, I've got this studio and I'm mostly recording drums for people in my studio. I just got a bit tired of endless airports and hotels and things like that. But yeah, so I'm mostly working at home recording drums for people.
Okay, that sounds good. You don't have to travel far.
Would have loved to have been in Finland because as Chris was saying, I did some of the tours that the Dire Straits Experience did in Finland and I absolutely loved it. I loved the cities. They're beautiful cities. The concert halls were amazing and I'd love to be there on Sunday.
Grillimaisterin kuuma linja, Henri Alen.
No terve, täällä on kuule piru merrassa nyt, täällä on hillitön määrä grillejä pistänyt liikenteen aika sekaisin, täällä ei pääse mihinkään. Tiedätkö, mikä homma tää nyt on? Halo?
No kyllä vaan, grillit on päättänyt kimpassa lähteä hakemaan arvoistansa grillattavaa juhannukseksi.
Mitä?
Niin, grillimaisteria.
Grillimaisteria.
Lidlin grillimaisteria.
Grillattavat Lidlistä, myös juhannuksena. Se kannattaa.
Viking Lotossa on nyt 25 miljoonaa euroa. Peliaikaa keskiviikkoon kello 19 asti. Rahapelaamisen ikäraja on 18 vuotta. Apua pelaamisen hallintaan pelaamaltilla.fi.
Veikkaus.